This is Will Ross, editor, publisher of the Rockwell Kent Forum. I'm here with Eric Downs, the filmmaker of the tremendous new film, A Dreamer's Search. I got the title right, correct?
Correct.
That's always good. And Eric's going to tell us a little bit about how he did it and why he did it. And first of all, Eric, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker from Kenai, Alaska. Born and raised in Alaska, and I've been a storyteller from a very young age. I really enjoy finding stories that are buried below the surface and then trying to dig them up and share them with the world. Drawn to inspirational stories. And so the story of Rockwell Kent definitely spoke to me the first time I heard it.
Do you remember when that was? How did you get, being from the Kenai Fjord area, of course, that's where Fox Island is, where Kent lived, but how did you first find out about him?
Yeah, I've been hearing his name pretty much all my life. My family, five generations of my family are from the Adirondack Mountain region on the shores of Lake Champlain. So right near where Kent's farm is, in 10 miles from Kent's farm. And so my mother and father grew up there in Northern New York and then moved to Alaska in the early 70s where I was born. And so I'd always heard his name through the years, but it wasn't until 2014 when my cousin from New York came for a visit to Alaska. And, you know, I said, we should go on an adventure when you get up here. Isn't there some artist guy from New York that came to Alaska years ago? And she said, oh yeah, Rockwell Kent. She's not only an amazing art teacher, but also an artist herself. And so I said, well, let's go dive into the story and go out to Fox Island. And my uncle, when I was telling him about that adventure, he said, now there's a historian named Doug Capra that lives in Seward, and he's, you know, you should go talk to him, get a hold of him. And so sure enough, through the power of the internet, I emailed Doug and he agreed to meet my cousin and I at the Resurrection Arts Coffee House there in Seward, just prior to us going out to the island. And, you know, I'll be honest, I'm a little bit of a blue collar filmmaker, not a huge fine arts person. And so, you know, I thought his work looked amazing. But when Doug came in with binders full of information and the story, and he spent, you know, 2 to 4 hours explaining this story to us, I was instantly hooked. I'm a huge history guy and I love peeling back the layers of a story. And so, we went out to the island with that information. Doug drew us a map of where the remains to the cabin were. And it was on that trip that I really reconnected with the wilderness and how important it is to get out there into the silence, into nature, and spend some time, you know, a quiet adventure. And from that point on, I kept digging deeper into the story. Around the 100-year anniversary in 2018, Doug was trying to put together a symposium in Seward and was having a difficulty getting traction and getting people interested. And so I reached out to him. He asked me if I'd be interested in coming out and trying to shoot a short documentary about Kent's adventure in Alaska. So a day before the anniversary, myself and another filmmaker went out to Fox Island. We interviewed Doug. We shot a bunch of B-roll, and the beginning of the project had started. Doug was, you know, I don't know. He had recently, at that time, he had been interviewed by the BBC leading up to the 100-year anniversary. And so he was definitely appreciative that he had a couple of local guys out there asking the hard questions. And anybody that's read Doug's Centennial blog knows that he just doesn't leave any stone unturned. He's wealth of knowledge when it comes to that story and many other Alaskan stories.
Absolutely. So, Doug's I've known Doug many years. And yeah, he's very knowledgeable in his work, and yeah, he takes this Alaska part of Kent's life and has spent a lot of time on it. So this is your first film, completed correct. Film. Am I right about that?
Correct.
Well, I've seen it. And for anybody watching this or listening to this, it's a tremendous achievement. I was very, very impressed. As my Australian wife would say, full marks to you for this. Who wrote the script?
Yeah, that's kind of the second chapter. So we went out and shot some interview footage with Doug and some B-roll. Winter of 2019, you know, I'd get calls from Doug. How's the film coming? How's the project coming? It's coming, you know. And like any artist, I was met with resistance and procrastination and all these things that get in our way. You know, I was just having such a hard time putting the story together through my voice as a storyteller. And it wasn't until spring 2020, when COVID hit, that I really stopped everything I was doing and asked myself, like, you want to keep talking about this? Do you want to keep calling yourself an aspiring filmmaker, or do you want to make a film? And at that point, I basically started from scratch. I went back and peacefully read Wilderness page by page, soaked it all back in, and then set out on about a 6-week journey writing the script without any real constraints about what the story was going to be, how I was going to make it. I just put words to paper and kind of let the story take the lead. And after 6 weeks, with a somewhat completed draft, it became clear that this documentary had turned into a narrative. So a fictional account of the true life events that took place on Fox Island. And, you know, that part was completely inspiring. I was down in Seward, walking on the beach, writing on my laptop. I mean, no lack of inspiration there. But after that phase was complete, I had to amass a crew to go make this film. And that's where the real fear came in. It was like, you know, it's one thing to write a screenplay, but it's a completely different thing to put a team together and go shoot it.
So you're faced with budget. And I mean, you run a construction firm in as your day job. And I understand about that. You know, I work for the federal government in my day job, and running this website is my other job. So now you're faced with a budget, trying to find other people to help you do it. Did you have any connections, or was this all from scratch?
You know, the filmmaking community in Alaska is fairly small. And so I didn't have a big wide network of filmmakers when the project started. So I was simply starting from scratch. But what I did have on my side was this amazing story. And so when it came to pitching the project and pitching the story, I mean, that was not a difficult, you know, I in so many circles, when people are telling you about the projects they want to make, you know, there's just so many, like, you always wonder, like, how are they going to make that? How are you going to tell that story? With me, I mean, I just, you know, when I was explaining this project to these filmmakers to try to get them interested to join the team, every one of them were hooked and just drawn in right away. And then they would go home and do their own research and Google, who's this Rockwell Kent guy? Of course, they're drawn in even more. So very quickly, I got in touch with the actor Bradford James Jackson, who had just moved back to Alaska. He's from Alaska, but he had been in LA for 7 years working as an actor. And he had just moved back to Alaska. And I was kind of comparing Rockwell Kent's photo to Brad's and going, yeah, you know, this might be a possibility. And sure enough, he was drawn into the story. He opened up his network of filmmakers in Anchorage. And within just a couple of weeks, we were in full-fledged pre-production and off to the races. And like you said, well, my day job is a construction manager. And so I spend my days estimating and planning commercial construction projects. And so that transfer, that skill set transfers over to being a film producer pretty well, putting the teams together, planning the budgets, planning the schedules, which is very important in filmmaking, really transfers over to that realm of pre-production, putting all the pieces in place. So when we go out and shoot this thing, we're not going to have, you know, we can adjust and we can pull it off. And so the pre-production process was also very inspirational, but it was also my comfort zone. I felt, you know, no worries during that part. And so, like I said, we put together a 15-person cast and crew of Alaskans to go out and shoot this film. And I really feel like we handpicked the right team. And that's the only reason we're here today. Everybody was very invested in the story. And I mean, I've worked side by side with construction trades all my life. And this group of filmmakers would put in amazing hours and go above and beyond just day after day. And it was amazing to see.
Well, before we went on, you basically filmed part on Fox Island, and it was very seamless to me. The part on Fox Island and the part with the cabin was done outside Anchorage, you said.
Yeah, of course. Unfortunately, the cabin's still not there on Fox Island. And so we had
that high, right?
Foundation. Yeah. If you know where to look, there is, I believe, 4 foundation logs and the chopping blocks still remain on Fox Island, covered by a couple feet of moss. And so that does still remain, as well as, you know, the location for Olson's site is still out there as well. But for our film, we knew we needed a cabin. And as exciting as that sounds, finding the right fit, you know, was a challenge. We looked at, you know, there's plenty of cabins in Alaska, but finding one that we felt was the right fit, we looked and looked and looked, and then finally found a spot north of Anchorage, at this place called Point McKenzie, where it's a property where they shoot other independent films. And so the owner, Greg Bell, was gracious enough to give us the cabin and as well as use of the wilderness to chop down as many trees as we wanted. And they were dead trees now, just so you know, these weren't, you know, completely live trees. And so, yeah, that was an important piece to the puzzle that when you're working with such a short time frame and you're trying to find locations, I mean, it's something that could delay the film. And of course, with Alaska, we only had a short window to go out and shoot the film.
How long was your, how long did it take to shoot the film once you decided to do it?
Yeah, production was 6 days. And so we shot 5 of those 6 days. We had 2.5 days. We had about a half day in Seward. We had 2.5 days out on Fox Island. We stayed at Kayaker's Cove, which is, if you ever get a chance to go to Alaska and experience Fox Island, Kayaker's Cove is an amazing lodge, wilderness lodge, that is right around the corner from Fox Island on the mainland. Of course, there's also the lodge that's on the island. It's a little more expensive and less rustic.
Well, I've stayed at the Lodge on Fox Island.
Yeah.
And it's a tremendous, all I'll say is it's a tremendous, tremendous experience. It really is.
Yeah. Nope. And so we had 2.5 days out there in Resurrection Bay shooting on Fox Island. And then we moved to the cabin site. So we had a day in between and then about 2.5 days out at Point McKenzie shooting at the cabin location.
And so how long was it for post-production? Well, that's I'll just say, I mean, I know nothing about film. Well, I do, but I don't do them. That seems awfully tight shooting schedule. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, time is money, and all these filmmakers, they have day jobs and they have families. And so pulling 15 people away during the middle of COVID to go make an independent film is a huge ask. And it's a huge undertaking. You know, we're not two or three people in their basement shooting a comedy. It was a very big ask and a very big risk for everybody involved. And it kind of mirrored Rockwell Kent's experience. I mean, it did not make sense on paper for Rockwell Kent to leave New York with his 8-year-old son and go to Alaska. I mean, there's no way he could really explain that to people. And we felt like the same thing. It's just, we were all out there. Are we going to be able to pull this off? And how are we going to do this? And the environment out there was one of the biggest things that drew us all together. Being in the wilderness, being surrounded by, you know, the forest, the mountains, the ocean, those things, the story, we, you know, every step of the way, we let the story take the lead, and everybody was inspired. Everybody was motivated. And, you know, we definitely had, I felt like we had the spirit of Rockwell Kent right by our side making this thing. Because the things that worked out and the things we found along the way, there's a certain percentage of stuff that's in the film that was never written, never planned, that was exposed to us while we were there in the moment. You know, because it was such a fast lead up to production, we didn't have time to do storyboarding or, I mean, massive shot list or massive planning. We went out and put ourselves in the environment, and it provided us rewards around every corner.
So, speaking of unusual, and you got one of my questions. When I talk to authors like Christy, or when I'm at an event and I'm able to talk to an author, I always say, "What did you discover that was completely unexpected to you about Rockwell Kent?"
You know, that's where I got so drawn into this idea of approaching the story as a documentary filmmaker and then leading into a narrative, because I found myself trying to dig what's the story that's not on the pages of the journal. And I became fascinated with that inner turmoil, that frustration of putting these expectations on oneself and having the right environment, but not being able to execute and perform and show the world what's buried inside him, and prove to himself and prove to the world that, you know, he's an artist. And he can support his family as an artist. So that burning desire, chasing after that burning desire, and fighting through, you know, that resistance, that fear, and making it happen. I mean, you know, that's why I connected so much with Kent's story. And, you know, the thing I guess I learned on Fox Island was the best part about it is sharing it with others, sharing that pursuit with others, because having those filmmakers out there on that island and sharing that story and seeing their faces light up when we were out there making that art was really the part that I hadn't prepared for. And it brought me to tears. The young actor, Ivor Mitchell, that played young Rocky, his dad was part of our camera department. And so seeing the two of them on the beach, spending time together, I mean, just gave me chills and brought tears to my eye. And, you know, it was so special for them to be out there and to create that experience. There's no way I could have planned for the feelings that that brought on. I mean, that's one thing that is so extraordinary about Ken's journey to Alaska is the fact that he spent the winter there in that environment. It's definitely the opposite of an island vacation as most people today would think of it.
I'm sure. And, it, and even, well, back in 1918, just to get there, you had to take a train across the country and then a ship from Seattle to Seward and then the rowboat. Fabulous shot, by the way. Just for people who don't know about Kent and Fox Island, he rowed his way over there. And it's, how far is it from Seward out to Fox Island?
In actual miles, I'm not sure. So when the water taxi or the boats take us out there, it's about 45 minutes to an hour by boat out to the island. And so, you know, like Kent said, it's, or I think it was the guy that recommended some of the islands out there. He said, you know, it's secluded enough to where you're away from everything, but it's close enough that if you need supplies, you can get them. So it's a great spot. No bears on the island. Another great thing that he could just turn Rocky loose and go exploring and not have to worry about getting eaten by a bear.
I never thought about that. You're right. Wow. You're right. I never even thought about that because there are a hell of a lot of bears up in Alaska. But it's a great shot when you show Kent, your actor, rowing he and Rocky over there to Fox Island. And that had to be a 2 or 3 hour trek, you know, rowing all by himself.
Yeah. Once again, we were in pre-production. I felt like we had all the pieces in place, you know, as good as can be planned. I mean, some of those things, you just kind of got to go into it and adjust on the fly. But I felt like we had our puzzle pretty well built out, our plan put together. One thing that was missing was the dory, the boat that we were going to use to shoot the film. Very important piece. And we could not find a good fit. At a certain point, 2 weeks before production, you know, I was left with, well, we can try to spray paint can this my buddy's boat and make it look period. We just didn't have any real good solutions. And our production designer, Jessica Cole, she came across a boat that was in Seward, a 100-year-old boat that had been restored and owned by a local in Seward, Bruce Stanford. And he graciously not only donated the use of his prized possession boat for the film, but he also commandeered the boat. He manned the boat. And so we told Bruce, you know, that's great. We really appreciate you letting us use the boat for the film. One more thing, would you be open to running the boat, you know, during production? And he was very excited to be a part of it. And we said, you know, of course, when we're shooting, you'll have to duck underneath the canvas tarp in the back of the boat. And so, you know, here's Bruce, this businessman from Seward, you know, crouched down underneath the canvas tarp in the back of the boat in Resurrection Bay as we're going along shooting those scenes. And yeah, it's it was one of those things we just kind of had to feel out as we went, and it all kind of came together in the end. And it was just so amazing to have use of that boat, because I mean, that's one of the things that could you know, jeopardize pulling the audience out of the period and out of the piece. Instead, I think it turned out to where it really kind of set that stage of adventure. And set up, you know, what it was like for him to head out into the ocean on that journey.
It certainly was one of the many journeys in his life. And speaking of Resurrection Bay, I have this, which is a reproduction of the chart in the book. And this is one that from the legacies that they did. And I understand that you don't have one of these.
I do not own that.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's been sitting in my garage for years to send it to you because I know it'll have a good home and be used. And this is from the UN Papers of Wilderness. You know, there's a Russian version of this, right?
Yeah, I've heard that.
And you can find it online. And the map, all the writing on the chart is in Cyrillic.
Wow.
And I don't know, and I have to find, I don't know if I can find out whether Kent did that himself, whether he re-lettered it or whether the Russians did that for him. It's worth finding if you can find it. You can find it online.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And it will have a good home. And I look forward to sharing it with lots of people, you know, as this journey continues.
So when you go, are you going to be attending, if you get it into, and I hope you do, into film festivals, will you be attending the festivals yourself? I don't know.
Yeah.
I know nothing. Let me preface this. I know nothing about how film festivals work, even though I did talk to some guy who ran the one in Fairbanks at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think the festival circuit's probably going to be very similar to making the film. We're just going to kind of let the spirit of Rockwell Kent and the story take the lead. Of course, if we're accepted into a film festival, then I'm going to make every effort to be there and share the story and plant those extra seeds, let people know where they can go to learn more about Kent and his art, share some of the themes that are close to the film, get people excited about getting back out into the wilderness, taking that risk, chasing after that pursuit that they've, you know, that's buried inside them like Kent did. So yeah, I mean, my hope is definitely to travel alongside the film as the festival circuit gets started. That probably won't be until spring of 2023. So yeah, we're looking forward to, you know, starting to share this with a wider audience.
Well, there's at least one in Colorado, Telluride. Is that still going on?
Yeah, actually Telluride just wrapped up this last weekend. And so the film has been submitted to several festivals in Colorado, as well as, you know, East Coast festivals, West Coast festivals. Just like making the film, we didn't really cut any corners when it came to little things that we needed to hold back on. So the same way with sharing it, we're gonna make every best effort to share it with as wide an audience as possible, with the hopes that it will share Kent's story and possibly look forward to a bigger project or more interesting project in the future.
So you think that there's a feature film in Fox Island, in Kent's adventure, quiet adventure in Alaska? Do you think there's enough?
Oh, I mean,
in those bones.
Well, there's no doubt that Kent, as an artist and a character subject matter, is, I mean, he is the perfect basis for a story. And so the fact that he created so much resource material, it just, it's such a complex story, and Kent's such a complex character that, yes, by all means, I don't think there's anybody better that lends itself to a feature-length film, a documentary project that's maybe related to Alaska, as well as, you know, future projects. I'm open to, you know, developing the story as we go. And yeah, absolutely. I want to be ready so that if people do approach us that are interested in expanding on what we have here, we'll be ready.
That's wonderful. What's next? What's next for you?
So yeah, we are in the really early stages. We just completed the film, and so we have done just a few little test previews down in Seward with Doug Capra, who I don't know if we mentioned Doug enough in this, but he's the historian and author that first, you know, brought the story to me and shared that with me. And so we're trying to plan some events for next summer, not only in Seward and on the Kenai Peninsula, but I'll be heading out to the East Coast in October and getting with the Rockwell Kent community on the East Coast in Northern New York. And I'm trying to plan some special events for summer 23 out there to accompany the festival run. Again, with festivals, it's really hard to say what festivals or how many festivals the film will be accepted into. And so we don't want that to be the only way to share the story. And so we're going to be over the winter, we're going to be working on putting together different things related to the film, being way more active in the Rockwell Kent community, as well as sharing the story and upcoming updates on social media, so that we can build the audience and the anticipation up for the festival run and the eventual release of the film. You know, at this point, there's no grandmaster plan to distribute the film on Hulu or anything crazy like that. We're just trying to take it slow at this point and share the film and see where it goes from there, not try to force things. And last October, getting back to the film making of the film itself, the one area we didn't touch on was post-production.
Right. And I know that it can be boring, but it's very important.
Oh, the most important. Yeah. So a couple of things I learned along the way, the writing process, completely inspiring. It had one story during the writing process, the production process, making the film, shooting the film, very inspirational. Also, the story developed into a whole nother story. And then post-production, that's where things really, really kind of hit a wall and, you know, a huge amount of resistance and, it became a challenge, because of the nature of us filmmakers in Alaska and where we all live. We're kind of spread out. So I was 3 hours away from my editor. Of course, we all have day jobs, and so we're trying to squeeze this project in with the rest of our lives. And also trying to do it with a reasonable budget. And so, you know, we're not bringing in a team that's under deadline and they've got 2 weeks to do it. It's, you know, we're going to squeeze it in over the next 3 months. My co-producers, John Kendall and Bradford James Jackson, were along with me on this journey through the whole process. And so we would basically, you know, during the editing process, send the project. We would review different drafts of the edit and send back notes. And, so time and life goes on, and before you know it, you know, 18 months had went by during post-production. Now, most people think it's just editing a film, but there's, you know, the editing, the music, the sound, the color, the VFX. I mean, on and on and on goes the list of post-production. So it's definitely one of the processes that, or the phase of filmmaking that I found to be the biggest challenge. And so the October of last year, I took a special trip to go visit my grandmother in Plattsburgh, New York, and went down and visited Kent's farm. And okay. I went into Kent's studio and I showed my cousin, the art teacher that I originally went to Fox Island, I showed her the latest cut of the film in Kent's studio. And so it was sitting there on the floor of Kent's studio watching that, that version of the film. I mean, I could feel Kent's spirit right behind me, kicking me, going, you better get this thing done, you know, like let's get over the finish line. And so that was really the last inspirational push that I needed. We got through the final stages of post-production this spring, and now we're ready to share this thing. But yeah, post-production definitely had its set of challenges.
Well, let me tell our audience that, having seen the film, it's beautifully shot. The scenes in Alaska, if you've not been to Alaska, you'll be absolutely blown away. And if you have visited, like I have, memories are fantastic. The kind of marsh or bog behind the cabin, when you get those shots, I know exactly where it's at because I was there. And tremendous, just tremendous. So you've been to the museum in Plattsburgh.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And like I said, that's where my grandparents still live. Well, my grandma still lives in Plattsburgh, New York. So I've been traveling to Plattsburgh my entire life, pretty much every fall for the leaf peeping season. And so, yeah, that's a place that's very near and dear to my heart. And so I'm super excited to go back to the Adirondacks this fall, especially.
Yeah, that'd be great. So you're going to show it to Tanya there at the museum? And
yes, of course. Yeah. Well, like I said, next month I'm going back out east. We'll be doing some preview screenings for people closest to the story, and then also planning some public events for next summer.
That's great.
Yep. Getting back to Doug Capra, him sharing his knowledge of the story and his, in his house in Seward, he's got a room that's just dedicated to his Rockwell Kent collection and all his research. And it's just, amazing the amount. But what occurred to me through the journey was the, how are we going to bridge the gap between historians and people that love history like us and younger generations, or just regular blue collar people that, don't really have a great love for art or history. And so I kind of took that on as my challenge to try and tell a story that can bring out some themes to not only share how amazing Rockwell Kent is as an artist, but also, the themes of Alaska, father and son, the wilderness itself. And so, that became one of my central pieces in trying to tell this story through the short film narrative is, how do we bridge the gap? It's great for all of us that really love Rockwell Kent and his story, but I really do think it's important to share his art and his story with a wider audience and a younger audience. What we got to introduce this stuff to young people and help them understand why it's important.
I agree. And I think your film is certainly one way to do it. Let me ask you this. What's your favorite Rockwell Kent painting? If you have one.
Yeah.
Of Alaska, or in general. I know it's hard to pick. But you've been to Plattsburgh, so you've seen Frozen Fall, right?
Yeah, of course.
I love that painting. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. As much as I love the paintings, I'm really drawn to the pen and inks. I really feel like they show the grittiness and the raw feeling of the wilderness out there. And, you know, we try to take great lengths. In fact, I feel like with Rockwell Kent, one of the things that's the most fun to share is, you know, asking when people ask, what's your film about? And I say the artist Rockwell Kent, and they stare back at me like they've never heard about him. I instantly get a smile because, you know, as most of us know, we feel like we're in this secret club. We know about this story and this artist that is so amazing that no one's heard of. And so to be able to share that. And so it was very important to us as filmmakers to try and capture that same feeling. And so we used several of the pen and ink drawings and tried to recapture those in the film. And so, you know, as you're watching the film, definitely be watching for those things. Those will be, you know, I don't know if you want to call them secret Easter eggs, but there's several of them in there that we went to great pains to try and capture and recreate, just like Kent did in his pen and ink drawings. So again, I felt totally blessed as a filmmaker to have that source material, to have the journal, to have the pen and inks. I mean, always have something to refer back to be able to share his amazing adventure.
And I had a shock of recognition at a couple of them, I will say that. I think one thing your film shows is the physicality of Rockwell Kent. He was in his 30s, but he'd been working as a workman for many years. And so, you know, rowing the boat, chopping wood, all these kind of things that you would have to do to survive in 1918 Alaska. And I think your film shows that side of him that I think a lot of people don't. He wasn't just an artist, he was a working man.
Yeah, that was definitely a challenge too, given how much time we had to try and share with the audience the pioneering spirit that Rockwell Kent had. You know, and that really comes through on the pages of Wilderness. But for the people that aren't going to sit and read Wilderness and soak that in, we had to try and show what that meant to be given a canvas like an old goat shed and know that winter was coming and be trying to prepare for winter and pioneering the land. We kind of used what we had out there. And, you know, the same with Rocky, when I was reviewing the script, I was getting some notes and coverage while I was writing. And some of the advice I got was, well, unless you can give Rocky his own story, why even have him in the film? You know, it's not going to make sense to have him just standing by his dad the whole time. And so, it was also important for us to, you know, some of the things that were in the pages and not on the pages to explore Rocky's transformation out on this island. And so it becomes a challenge. I wanted to share all of it, but inside the a 30-minute short film, trying to share the backstory of those characters and share what they went through out there. You know, all we could hope to do is plant a seed so that people will want to know more. And, you know, we hope for a bigger project down the line.
Well, I think I certainly think that what you did with Rocky works in the film. I'm not going to give a review of it.
Right.
I'm not, but I'll say that all three characters. And tell me a little bit about the actor who played Olson.
Yeah, Steve Hill. He's an Alaskan actor. You know, when it came to finding and casting Olson, Very important step of the process. I mean, we've got to have somebody that's larger than life and that has that, you know, raw, gritty, Alaskan feel. I mean, this is a guy that came to Alaska in the mid to late 1800s and spent time out in the wilderness as a prospector and gold miner, going from gold rush to gold rush, and eventually ended up on, you know, Fox Island, raising foxes and attending to his goats. And so the actor, you know, we obviously auditioned several different actors, and Steve Hill came along, and it was just, you know, the perfect fit. We, you know, I could see him as Olsen, and his demeanors and mannerisms, you know, for people that know the story, the one thing we decided to not put in there was the Swedish accent. And so, you know, that was, and that's one of the things about telling a narrative. You really have to make those decisions of what makes sense at the time and what's most important to telling your story. And so that was one of the things that got chopped out of there. We thought, well, you know, let's just, out of all the things that are important, I don't know that the Swedish accent, unless we could pull it off perfectly, is important. So that's one spoiler.
No, that's a spoiler. And I did, to my mind, it didn't impact it at all. You know, it's the character of Olsen in terms of his pioneering spirit. You're right, that's more important. Did you have the cast or the crew read Wilderness? I mean, did you give them copies of the book? Or
of course, yeah, that was okay. That was one of the like I said, when it came time, you know, once I was done writing the script and it came time to start building this crew, and I went into pitching mode to pitch the story, everybody lit right up and they were like, wow, I don't know that they understood how we were going to pull it off, but they were really invested from early stages that this is a story that needs to be told and passed on. And like I said, I think one of the best part about it is that it's not something that everybody's heard about. And even in Alaska, you know, even in the town of Seward, there's still people that you come across and you mention Rockwell Kent's name and they shake their head. And so that's, you know, the fun part about being a storyteller that knows the story and is part of this journey.
Oh, I'm glad for your time. I appreciate it very much. And I'm really, really grateful for your film. I'll say this as somebody who's been collecting Rockwell Kent for 40 years. We started out like we were a cult almost. But with you there in Alaska, with Christy Gillespie in Ireland, the folks in Brigus, South America, everything. My editor's spindle is overflowing with things to talk about. And I'm really glad. We're almost done with our time here, but I'm really glad to spend time with you today, Eric. And I look forward to doing it in person, hopefully soon, out in Palm Springs or some other film festival here in the LA area or Santa Barbara or wherever in California. But I wish you all success. And you get the last word. What do you want? And we've talked a lot about what you want people to get out of all this. Yeah. What have you gotten out of your voyage so far with Rockwell Kent?
I want to say thank you so much for welcoming me into the Rockwell Kent community, the insider community. Because like I said, I you know, only really started diving into the story in 2014. So I'm honored to be a part of this group and be able to share the story. Yeah, you know, I guess the biggest takeaway for me is how we hold on to these things that are most sacred and dear to us, and the idea of sharing them, because some of these stories that are buried under the surface or are harder to tell, it's easy to just store them away in our collection and hold on to them tightly. But I really think there's a danger there of them not being passed on to the next generation. And so I really think it's important to do that, and but to do that in a way that that makes sense and not just throw it out there. I mean, you know, I know one thing, Rockwell Kent has some very high standards. And so I have tried to consider that throughout this journey and honor his adventure to Alaska. And then also honor the community that holds that story so close to themselves. So yeah, that's, you know, bridging the gap and trying to share these tough to tell stories, these complex stories with people. You know, that's been very fascinating and exciting moving forward.
Well, break a leg in the future and on the festival circuit, and all success to you in the future. And I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you, Eric, for your time this morning.
Yep. And anybody, anybody that wants to reach out to me, learn more about the film, feel free to go to our website, adreamerssearch.com. You can fill out the contact info there, send me an email. I'm very accessible. So anybody that's, wants to learn more, please feel free to email me, and, yeah, can't wait to share it with you guys.